Hard work beats talent when talent doesn't work hard. That's why when it comes to hard work, nothing works harder than a Chevy Silverado, the official truck partner of the Chicago Bears. Check out a new Silverado at ChevyDriveChicago.com.
Thank you very much, Kim Gordon. Steve Bertrand here. You're listening to the Wintrust Business Lunch on 720 WGN. A little bit later in the program, you know, one of the issues that the candidates will be talking about in the race for president is the affordability of college, the cost of student loans and all of that. And there actually was a move toward easing some of the costs in Illinois. Governor Rauner signed a bill not too long ago that will allow high schools to offer classes for college credit, and as I understand it, for free. One of the sponsors of that idea, State Representative David McSweeney, he will join us to talk about that a little bit later. But first, let's go play Pokemon Go. Philip Weiss is the managing director of Seyfarth Shaw at Work, and he joins us from time to time to talk about issues that he is advising his clients on, and lo and behold, Pokemon is the latest. Philip, welcome to the Business Lunch.
Good to be here, Steve. Thank you.
All right, so from what I understand, my son was playing Pokemon Go for a while, and he's sort of tired of it, but this thing, when it took off a couple of weeks ago, set all kinds of download records, and it's really set the country by storm.
Yeah, absolutely. It's also caught a lot of managers and bosses by surprise, and mentioning your son, and for that matter, my 15-year-old daughter, we've noticed that the kids have begun to disengage because they're looking for the next great game. But adults, 20-year-olds, 30-year-olds in the workplace, have not detached themselves, so it remains an ongoing issue for businesses.
Well, and that's the thing. You gave me some statistics. The average Pokemon Go player is 25 years old, college educated, making $90,000 a year.
Yeah.
Tell me about these people.
Yeah, it's really something that few expect. If you walk outside, you seem to be looking at throngs of teens playing, but that's because the adults are playing everywhere else, including in the workplace. And what it's resulted in, Steve, is all kinds of unexpected challenges. A lot of our clients tell us, you know, we think this is heralding a kind of a new age where these augmented reality games that are so addictive are going to be a challenge in terms of how you manage and how you respond.
So this is the first of many to come?
That's the expectation, and the popularity of the game, the immediate attraction and the addictive nature, I think create a real push for developers and companies in the industry.
One other stat that is surprising to me is the gender breakdown. They're more likely to be women playing Pokemon Go in your workplace than men. 63% of the players are female. I didn't expect that. That doesn't fit the couch in the basement sort of stereotype.
It certainly does not. And it's also something that we're seeing anecdotally. And what's interesting, Steve, from a standpoint of management, is managers are not ready, don't know how to respond to players who are coming in late from breaks, and that could be a woman or a man, coming in late in the morning because they stopped their car four or five times to chase a Pokemon, or simply are getting drawn in during breaks in the workplace itself. So the productivity issues are already apparent. At one client, a creative company that's in the Chicago area, they began to track almost a 10% increase in tardies, and they talked to the employees involved. It was all Pokemon Go.
So 10% of their workforce was coming in late, and they said it was because they were playing Pokemon Go.
That's right. And this whole, there's like what we call the three D's, the three dangers of Pokemon Go. One is what we call sort of dereliction of duty, and that includes tardies. That includes employees, Steve, who are calling a customer back after a prolonged delay and then blaming their Pokemon play. You know, I was chasing a Pikachu. So sorry about the delay. The other area, which is probably even more of an immediate risk, is what we might call death and destruction by Pokemon Go. And that relates to both the fact that visitors come into workplaces, cross private property, sometimes remote facilities that a company has really virtually abandoned or failed to properly monitor. Well, those are all Pokemon hunting grounds, and employees find that people have been locked in to warehouses late at night, that were traipsing through the grounds, have accessed R&D facilities. There's all kinds of instances now where the public is finding themselves in private property locations, and there's obviously safety risks as well as security risks.
Well, that's one of the things I wanted to ask you about then. So when it comes to you advising businesses, you are encouraging your companies to actually set up patrols and to patrol areas where Pokemon Go players might be wandering.
That's exactly right. It's sort of almost like a military kind of view of your responsibility, sort of, you know, guard the perimeter in a way. Because if you've got sites in abandoned warehouses or just a warehouse you don't use very often, you've got the back alley to your retail establishment, and you don't really spend time checking for safety hazards, those are all risk points. We had an agricultural client in downstate Illinois, Steve, and they found that a visitor almost fell into a grain silo chasing one of these characters.
I'm sorry, Philip, maybe I got ahead of myself, but can you give us 20 seconds on just exactly what Pokemon Go is? As I understand it, there's different characters, and they're GPS located, and you try to get them, get within a distance of them to score points, right?
That is exactly right. So in essence, it's a game played on an individual smartphone, and the primary purpose, as you said, Steve, is to identify and then capture the various Pokemon characters, which appear, in essence, as cartoon characters. As you chase them around using your smartphone, you're looking at a virtual, almost like a video game landscape, but the moment you spot a Pokemon Go character, as you capture it, the screen transforms into a camera view, a real-life video view of the world around you. So it's mixing the virtual world and the real world, therefore the name augmented reality. And a lot of psychologists, industrial and workplace psychologists, think it's that augmented reality, that combination of the virtual and the real world, that is such an attraction to players. There's certainly levels to the game, but the primary activity is locating these characters, capturing them, and building a team, so to speak.
And you can see if you're that close that it'd be hard to put the phone down and actually show up for work on time.
That's exactly right, particularly if it's a rare or highly sought-after character. The fact that you can see these characters are nearby and just another 20 feet or another 5 minutes will capture the character, that's all people need to stay engaged.
All right, so that's going on now, and maybe it's waning a little bit, although maybe it's not with the older crowd. What interests me most, and tell me about this a little bit again, is that you think this is the first of what's to come. We're going to be dealing with this with other games and companies in the future.
Yeah, we think that that's exactly right. In fact, a number of the software developers that we represent have talked to us offline about the fact that this is the next project. If they haven't been involved in augmented reality, they plan to. And it's clear why. The attraction and the financial benefit and windfalls are enormous, not to mention the fact that retailers and other businesses can join in and capitalize by attracting people to their location by establishing what is called a lure, which lures both Pokemon characters and therefore players into their location.
That is Philip Weiss, Managing Director of Seyfarth Shaw at Work. Philip, good to talk to you again. Thanks for coming in.
Thank you, Steve.
You're listening to the Business Lunch on 720 WGN. It's 1223, the Wintrust Business Lunch here on 720 WGN. Seems to me it's been a pretty hot summer, another hot day today, and one of those days you want to put on sunscreen. Sunscreen is an $8.5 billion industry in the U.S. It's only going to get bigger. And Kristen McClellan, the founder of Snappy Screen, has found a way to make it bigger, I think. She joins us now on the program. Kristen, welcome to the Business Lunch.
Hi, Steve. How are you?
I'm great. I love this idea. It's not an altogether new idea, right? Snappy Screen has been around for a few years. But tell me about it.
So Snappy Screen is a touchless sunscreen application system. So what that means is basically you walk up to one of our devices, you can select your SPF, 15, 30, or 40, as well as make a height selection for adults versus child, and you actually step into our device, and it does one rotation, and in about 10 seconds, you're completely and, more importantly, evenly covered from head to toe with sunscreen.
So I think of, you know, when you drive through a car wash and they administer the soap on the car.
Yeah.
Is that close?
Very similarly.
Maybe not quite as thick, though, right? Because
not quite.
Obviously you're spraying this over clothes and everything, so when they walk out of that machine, are people feeling a little sticky? Or, I mean, I would imagine you've got that sort of process down.
Yeah, no, you don't feel sticky at all, and that's because of our proprietary sunscreen formula. So we spent about a year creating a special sunscreen formula, and it's a high-quality, alcohol-free, oxybenzone-free, hypoallergenic, paraben-free, clear continuous spray. So it doesn't harm your clothing, and it's still a UVA, UVB broad spectrum sunscreen that's water resistant. So you go in your bathing suit, but you could go in any type of clothing, and it doesn't harm your clothing, and you come out, because it's alcohol free, not feeling sticky at all. You just simply look shiny.
I like the way this is set up too, because you give, well, the machines to resorts or whoever's using it sort of at cost, but you make your money or you grow your business by selling these cartridges. I think they're 4-gallon cartridges of the sunscreen, right? You give the administrative process or the application process away in a way, but then they have to buy your product to put it on people.
Yeah, so actually our team comes in and it installs it for the property. So we'll come in for an implementation period, help them, you know, get acquainted with the machine, train their staff, and then they simply, you know, purchase their sunscreen cartridges from there.
Who uses these? Big resorts, local pools? Who uses these?
Yeah, so right now we're mainly in 4- and 5-star luxury hotels and beach resorts. But, you know, every day we kind of get a new market. We hear from country clubs, luxury condos, public pools and beaches. So while right now we're in the hotel industry, I definitely see kind of this expanding to elsewhere.
How about a mom who's just got a lot of kids and she's tired of putting the lotion on?
You'd be surprised. I've heard from many.
obviously, the word luxury keeps coming up. So this is sort of a high-end thing. And yet, if you're a beach resort, I would think it would be an attractive thing to bring customers in. It would be something nice to have.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, the focus on sun safety has definitely been coming to the forefront for many of these luxury properties. And having these new, you know, top-notch amenities for the properties has been very popular these past few years. So since kind of the importance of sun protection has been coming to the forefront for the end user, meaning their guests, they definitely have been looking for new ways to provide that for them.
All right, so I would imagine growth is on your mind. What are your targets? How fast and how big are you going to get?
You could only imagine. I mean, we hear from new countries, new industries every single day. So, you know, as I said before, right now we're focused on the top high-end hotels here in the U.S. and Caribbean. But slowly but surely, we are definitely going to be expanding quickly.
Kristen, real quick, then Snappy Screen is the name of the company. Are there other people doing what you do?
Not really. I mean, we kind of specialize in full coverage. So really where our device is our biggest two things are full coverage and encouraging reapplication. So the Snappy Screen system is mainly unique because it provides that full coverage in 10 seconds, and it's been thoroughly tested with these special cameras to allow for, you know, guests to walk in and be able to achieve that in only 10 seconds. So that part of it is really unique to us.
Pretty cool,
you know,
thing.
Making sunscreen more simple has definitely been on top of mind for many people.
It is Snappy Screen. Kristen McClellan is the brains behind it. Thanks for joining us today. I appreciate it.
Thank you very much, Steve. Thanks for having us.
You bet. You're listening to The Business Lunch on 720 WGN. All right, thank you very much, Kim Gordon. Steve Bertrand here. You're listening to The Business Lunch on 720 WGN. In the studio this afternoon, Frank Sennett from Crane Chicago Business. Frank, welcome back to the program.
Thank you, Steve.
Frank's visit is sponsored each week by Allstate, and we thank them for that. One of the stories that I wanted to talk to you about is this U.S. Steel site on the south side, the Southworks site, which is that where did Dave Matthews hold a concert there once?
5 years. It's so funny you should mention that, Steve. 5 years ago, last month, I was down at that site for the Dave Matthews Band Caravan. Beautiful views of the lake and beautiful views of the skyline. And they had a table set up for attendees, many of whom were wearing flip-flops, to pick up the shards of metal that were still, you know, apparent around the site, because they had taken, you know, some machines to flatten it out, etc. But there were still big chunks of machinery that were catching people's toes and things. But it was a beautiful, beautiful concert, and you thought, wow, this is going to be redeveloped. This is going to be amazing, you know, home. Something's going to happen here soon. And here it is 5 years later, still a flat piece of ground.
Yeah, U.S. Steel had worked with another company to come up with this plan, and I remember from that concert they sort of used it as a marketing, like, look at the wonderful view of the city, it is closer to downtown than you think. But this plan, was it Cushman and Wakefield, I think, put it together for a big housing and retail and all that, just sort of never got off the ground, so now they're just trying to sell it as is, right?
Yeah, that's right. It's a 430-acre parcel, and Cushman and Wakefield was looking at it as residential and retail all in one development. Never quite got off the ground, so now they're taking a different approach. Cushman and Wakefield is the new.
Oh, that was my fault.
Yeah, McCaffrey was the one that was developing it. So Cushman and Wakefield has had it for a couple of weeks, and they're looking at maybe selling it off as a whole piece, or maybe having it be in parcels. Part of it residential, retail, but also part of it could be industrial redevelopment. They're looking at data centers, possibly. There's a piece on the Calumet River that could be attractive for that. Solo Cup was looking at maybe doing a factory there at one point, but they moved away from that plan. But that kind of business could be coming in, as well as, you know, a mix of residential and retail.
When we say data centers, it's kind of, is that the cloud they're referring to?
Yeah, exactly. I mean, I think you got a lot of water for cooling centers down there, for sure.
Right. All right, so, and by breaking it up, maybe they can sell some for residential and some for industrial.
That's right, and the piece on the Calumet is 128-acre parcel, so that would still leave a good 300 acres for, you know, residential, retail kind of development. And as you say, I mean, it's just got great access with public transportation up to the loop, and great views. It's a very pretty property. I would love to at least see another concert there before they build it out.
Well, and the first move they made seems to be a good one. They're no longer calling it the South Work site. They're calling it 8080 Lakeshore.
Yeah, so the address
makes me want to live there, Frank.
Exactly. It's a fancy address for fancy people like me and you.
Let's talk ComEd, too, because they are trying to close a couple of their nuclear plants, right? Or they want to, because they say they're not making money. They're money losers. They're asking the state for a rate hike that will help keep them in operation. And I think they're still talking about that, right? But then they're talking also about where they would put these 1,500 workers should these plants shut down.
That's right. Steve Daniels has the story at ChicagoBusiness.com. There are still negotiations behind the scenes on potential legislation, as you note, to save these two money-losing nuclear power plants. But Exelon, in the meantime, has slated them for closure. And the big headline today is that Exelon is promising that the 1,500 plant workers who could lose their jobs with these closures will be offered jobs at other Exelon plants. So, but they may not be in the state of Illinois. So Exelon is saying, look, we're going to take care of these workers. We're going to give them opportunities, but then their taxes and that tax base could move out of the state. So let's, you know, maybe try to save these things.
So the plants we're talking about are at Clinton and the Quad Cities. And, well, they say if they get a rate hike that it would make it more economical for them to keep it open. That would be good for those communities. Everyone keeps their jobs, and the shop owners and the restaurant owners and all of that continue to sell their products as well.
That's right. And Exelon, in its announcement, said that if it does go forward with the closures, it will relocate the workers, give them that opportunity. But they said, and I quote, Clinton and Quad Cities will have a devastating impact with the closure. So they're really laying it on the line.
Well, and they would, I suppose. Yeah. And the other thing is that, you know, those workers aren't all going to travel to Pennsylvania or Maryland or wherever these other jobs are.
Yeah, no, in that case, I mean, if you've got roots down and your kids, you know, a year from graduating high school or whatever, there may be a chance that you would want to stay rather than go to the new job. But they are saying at least they're going to offer them the opportunity.
The other side of it is, why should people who are paying for their electricity pay more to keep open plants that aren't economically feasible, right? That's the argument from the environmentalists.
Yeah, so a spokesman from the Environmental Law and Policy Center in Chicago notes that when you keep plants open that are uneconomic, someone is paying for that. So you're right. You know, it's a balance between, you know, the economic interests of the state in terms of the tax base, keeping these communities healthy, and, you know, making sure that consumers are getting a fairer shake.
So what's in Exelon's interest to come out and say, these people won't lose their jobs? I mean, I guess that puts it more firmly on state lawmakers to help them out? I mean, saying we'd be the good guys, we'll keep these guys employed, but they're going to leave devastation in their wake?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's a threading the needle. You know, you're a good corporate citizen in the sense that you're keeping these jobs intact. You're not going to leave these folks destitute, but you're saying, look, we need this help, or else we got to close these plants. We need this legislation, and that is going to have a negative impact on the community. So I think they're saying, look, you know, we're going to try to do the right thing as well as we can, and it's up to the legislature whether that right thing continues to be in Illinois here at these two plants or elsewhere.
You know, a couple of weeks ago in one of the storms that blew through, I lost electricity in my home. And when it happened, I'm thinking, wow, this hasn't happened in a long time. We used to have outages from time to time, and they've really improved that. You know, we just don't have the outages like we used to.
Smart grid.
The smart grid, and this was weather-related, so, I mean, it's going to happen. It's kind of understandable. But Cranes is also reporting on not all of the outages have to do with the weather, right? Sometimes they're the critters are involved.
Yeah, this is my favorite illustration on the website right now. It shows a squirrel hit by a lightning or electricity, it's like an X-ray picture. You see, like, the bones of the squirrel. It's definitely check that visual out.
With the word zap next to the squirrel.
Exactly, like a Batman cartoon. But, yeah, so the number of outages is down, but animals still do create some outages by, you know, landing on the wires, et cetera. And the leader by far is the pesky squirrel. 85% of wildlife-related interruptions are caused by those little rodents, those furry, fun-loving, nut-eating little rodents.
Let's go to the numbers, Frank. 2015, 2,500 outages caused by squirrels.
That's right.
Only 44 by birds. 3 by snakes, which I really want to have explained to me. I don't quite get that.
It's the amazing flying snakes. Yeah, like, how does that happen? Are there snakes that live up in trees to drop? I mean, boa constrictors is, you know, in the Amazon, but not in Illinois, right?
Well, no, maybe they get into the equipment on the ground somehow. I don't know.
Possibly. But, or, you know, kid could throw a snake up at the power line, something like
very,
that.
Very, very even statistics, though. 3, 5, 2, 2, 3 outages per year for the past 5 years.
It kind of feels like maybe it's the same 2 or 3 snakes.
Or the same 2 or 3 kids. Maybe it's the same 2 or 3 kids.
Some people throw sneakers over the power line.
Right.
Others throw snakes.
Okay, but there actually is a reason for bringing this up, right? Because it was a mild winter. We've got a lot of squirrels. And the last time there was a mild winter with a lot of squirrels was 2002. And there was a big jump in the fall when it comes to these outages.
Yeah, so we may be looking at squirrelpocalypse.
Well, that means that we'll have more to talk about sometime in the future.
And now, live in the field, we go to squirrelpocalypse reporter. Yeah, exactly.
Frank Sennett, you can read more at chicagobusiness.com. Nice to talk to you again this week. I appreciate it.
Thanks, Steve.
It's the Business Lunch on 720 WGN. Thanks very much, Steve Alexander. Steve Bertrand here on the Wintrust Business Lunch. You know, you can send me a tweet. I'm at Steve Bertrand, or on Facebook at Steve Bertrand as well. And hope you will do that. We'll be back again tomorrow with more. Right now, I want to talk to State Representative David McSweeney about this new plan to make college a little bit more affordable. He's a Republican, Northwest Suburbs, and he joins us on a phone line now. Representative, welcome to the Business Lunch.
Thanks for having me on, Steve.
All right, I'm going to put your district around Lake Zurich, right? Are you in Lake Zurich or nearby there?
Nearby. Actually, Cary, Fox River Grove, Barrington, Wakanda. It's a little west of Lake Zurich.
All right, you want to annex Lake Zurich? While we're on the phone, maybe we can take care of that.
Lake Zurich's a great place. Love to have it in my district.
Well, you know, everyone's talking about college affordability, and a lot of times it comes to refinancing student loans or things like that. But there's a new program in Illinois. I'm not sure I understand it all together, but it creates dual credits for high schools and community colleges in the area. Explain it for me, Representative.
What we're trying to do is make college more affordable. So there is a program that's been set up in a local school district, District 300, that we are bringing statewide. And what it does is it allows high school seniors to get dual credit while they're taking community college classes. There is no additional cost to taxpayers. The cost of educating The student is already taken care of in the school aid formula and the local support, and they're just simply using the money to pay community college tuition. The student will also continue to have some of the high school experience. So for students who qualify, we're just trying to make community college more affordable, and we're expanding that program statewide at no additional cost to the taxpayers.
So the District 300, that's Algonquin, right, where they tried it out?
That is. In fact, they actually have a new school superintendent who has put forth a lot of innovative ideas, and I think it's just a way of ensuring that the parents can afford college for their children, and also for students who are having to take care of their own college. It makes them more affordable, and it just gives an opportunity to earn community college credit while still in high school and still participating in some of the high school activities.
All right, so let's say I'm a high school senior and I am trying to get college credits. You know, a lot of kids take AP courses for advanced placement. That's different, right? I think that costs a few $100 per class.
It is. That is different. There is the ability to get college credit for taking the AP, but this would only be for community colleges, and again, would allow the high school student who qualifies to actually enroll in community college programs, get credit for that, and also get credit for their final year in high school. And this is only if they meet certain academic standards and qualifications, but it gives an opportunity for students to get a leg up.
All right, so I'm a senior in high school. I'm going to take an English class, and I want it to be the equivalent of English 001 at my nearby community college. Is it the community college and the high schools working together to establish a joint curriculum? Is that how that works?
Absolutely. In fact, they enter into joint agreements. So, for example, for Elgin Community College, as an example, for District 300, they have an agreement with the school district, and it's not just for one class. It's actually for a full curriculum of community college programs. So if the student meets the qualifications, there's an agreed-upon curriculum. The student takes the classes at the community college, comes back to the high school at least one day a week to participate in some of the high school activities, and the student will get credit for high school and community college programs.
So that's maybe I missed that representative earlier. So if you're taking one of these classes, you're doing it at the community college facility?
That's correct.
Okay.
And so the student is actually going to the local community college, taking the course, but also still participating in some of the high school activities.
So I got you. Okay. Well, that makes a little more sense.
Yeah, so if a student meets the requirements, they just have the opportunity, academic requirements, they have an opportunity to earn dual credit and to make college more affordable.
So in a way, it's flipped from my understanding. I was thinking you're taking a high school class that qualifies as college, but really, in a way, you're taking a college class that satisfies high school requirements.
That's correct. You're getting dual credit for students who meet the qualifications. So a senior will get the credit for the final year in high school, and will also get the community college credit. And the reason there's no additional cost is there's, of course, a cost associated with educating that student in high school. So
right.
Part of that that money will be used to pay tuition at community college, and the other portion will cover some of the additional costs, including the fact that the student will still be in the local high school part of the time.
So the credits, the college credits, will that apply to any community college in Illinois or only the local one associated with the high school?
The local one associated with high school. They have to have a local agreement, and then those credits will also be able to transfer to other colleges in the state of Illinois, but it requires them to set up an agreement with a local community college.
Okay, that was my next question. So a lot of students, a lot of kids take classes at the community college with the idea of saving money at a four-year university and transferring those credits. That would be less likely to happen in this case.
Well, actually, the credits will transfer still. So let's go through an example of a student who takes community colleges during their senior year in high school and then decides to go to University of Illinois. Those credits will transfer because
they'll
there
transfer
are agreements.
They'll transfer to state schools, but they might not transfer to Penn State or Notre Dame or Wisconsin or something like that.
That's correct. It's a case-by-case basis, depending on how the agreements are in place right now.
Which is okay, right? We're just growing. We're figuring things out. You might as well give it a shot.
Absolutely. successful. And what I'm trying to do is, number one, do something on a cost-efficient basis for students and parents. And number two, make sure it doesn't cost additional money. As you know, we've got a mess in the state. We've got an $8 billion deficit, and we have $10 million of unpaid bills. And a lot of the politicians in the state are talking about raising taxes. So I'm just trying to get something done here that will be cost-efficient and provide some new opportunities for students.
State Representative David McSweeney represents Cary, that area, for the state, a Republican, and he's soon to annex Lake Zurich as well. We learned that today.
Great.
Representative, thanks for joining us. I appreciate it.
Thanks for your time.
You bet. It's the Business Lunch on 720 WGN.